The Hindu discipline of spirituality provides for this need of the soul by the conceptions of Ishta Devata. Ishta means that which is desired, that which is liked, admired, the Sanskrit word. Ish is the word of Ichha. The word Ichha comes from Ish. That which is desired, that which is favored by you. Your favorite God, that is Ishta Devata, the avatar and the guru. By Ishta Devata, the chosen deity is meant not some inferior power, but a name and form of the transcendent and universal Godhead. Almost all religions either have at their base or make use of some such name and form of the divine. Its necessity for the human soul is evident. God is the all and more than the all. But that which is more than all, than the all, how shall man conceive? And even the all is at first too hard for him. For he himself, in his active consciousness, is a limited and selective formation and can open himself only to that which is in harmony with his limited nature. There are things in the all which are too hard for his comprehension or seem too terrible to his sensitive emotions and cowering sensations. Or simply, he cannot conceive as a divine, cannot approach or cannot recognize something that is too much out of the circle of his ignorant and partial conceptions. It is necessary for him to conceive God in his own image. This is now the other way around. In the true learning, you become like God. That is the ultimate course of action. But in the beginning, you like God to be like you, not yourself becoming like God, but you like that, or that form of God which is like you. And if you turn more easily to that aspect of the divine which is more like you. There is a very difficult word in English, anthropomorphism. You should try to pronounce this word also. Anthropomorphism. To make God in the image of man is anthropomorphism. To think of God as if he is a human being, regarding him as a human being, because human beings are pleased when you praise them, and therefore you approach God to praise him so that he may be pleased with you, is anthropomorphic. We believe that just as human beings are pleased by flattery, God also is pleased by flattery. Which is not true, but it is to look upon God as if he is a human being. Because when you strike somebody and then you feel that now you'll take revenge against me, similarly you revolt against God and you believe that now God will take revenge against me. God will not like me. God will be now offended. He does not know that God is never offended. That is the divine. As Sri Aurobindo says, God is not offended by our revolts. He is like a mother. He understands your revolts. And even in your revolt, he comes to you and embraces you. But that requires a higher knowledge of the divine. Otherwise, normally we think, if I now revolt against God, God will go away from me. He'll be offended. But he is not offended. So to image God in man's image, that is anthropomorphism. But even that has a use, because God uses everything. Every method of man is used by God for His purposes. So this idea of looking upon divine in the form in which we like Him, God also takes that form. If you like a certain form of God and say, well, I like this very much, then God takes that form also and treats you through that. It is necessary for Him to conceive God in His own image or in some form that is beyond Himself but consonant with His highest tendencies and seizable by His feelings or His intelligence. Otherwise, it would be difficult for Him to come into contact and communion with the Divine. So even anthropomorphism has uses. You start with it, ultimately you will come to God Himself and then throw away anthropomorphism. Even then, His nature calls for a human intermediary so that He may feel the divine in something entirely close to His own humanity and sensible in a human influence and example. So even Ishta Devata may not be enough. A God who is very near to you, even that may not be enough for you to approach God. So you may come to a human form. That is why the human guru is needed. Even then His nature calls for a human intermediary, so that He may feel the divine in something entirely close to His own humanity and sensible in a human influence and example. This call is satisfied by the divine manifest in a human appearance, the incarnation, the avatar, Krishna, Christ, Buddha. Or if this is too hard for Him to conceive, the divine represents Himself through a less marvelous intermediary, prophet or teacher. For many who cannot conceive or are unwilling to accept the divine man, are ready to open themselves to the Supreme Man, terming Him not incarnation, but world teacher or divine representative. This also is not enough. A living influence, a living example, a present instruction is needed. So you may have Ishta Devata, or you may have incarnation as a great being who lived in physical, but as an incarnation. Even that may not be enough. You may have a teacher, a prophet. But a prophet of the past may not be enough. You need sometimes even a living teacher, one who can talk to you physically, one who can, you can see Him living day after day. A living influence, a living example, a present instruction is needed. For it is only the few who can make the past teacher and His teaching, the past incarnation and His example and influence, a living force in their lives. For this need also, the Hindu discipline provides in the relation of the guru and the disciple. The guru may sometimes be the incarnation or world teacher, as Arjuna found in Krishna, as is a living teacher. And it so happened that Krishna was not only a human teacher, but He was also incarnation. The guru may sometimes be incarnation or world teacher, but it is sufficient. that he should represent to the disciple the divine wisdom, convey to him something of the divine ideal, or make him feel the realized relation of the human soul with the eternal. He may not be a great prophet, he may not be a great incarnation. If the teacher can give him the knowledge of the divine, can take him to the experience of the divine, even that is enough, and even that should be provided for. The sadhaka of the integral yoga will make use of all these aids according to his nature. There is nothing that is denied in the integral yoga. You can worship a human teacher who may not be a great incarnation. You can worship a teacher who is incarnation or a prophet, either of the present day or of the past. Or you can go to a god, Ishtadevata, favored god or goddess. Or you go directly to the Supreme Teacher himself within yourself. Any and all, everything is admitted in the integral yoga. The sadhaka of the integral yoga will make use of all these aids according to his nature. But it is necessary that he should shun their limitations and cast from himself that exclusive tendency of egoistic mind which cries, "My God, my incarnation, my prophet, my guru." This is the evil which should be avoided. You may love your teacher, but you say, "Oh, my teacher is the only teacher in the world and none other. My prophet is the only prophet in the world." This exclusiveness, the Supreme God is the only God, the one without the second. All other forms are secondary forms, and we should take them all in their supreme light. It is necessary that he should shun their limitations and cast from himself that exclusive tendency of egoistic mind which cries, "My God, my incarnation, my prophet, my guru," and opposes it all to all other realization in a sectarian or a fanatical spirit. All sectarianism, all fanaticism must be shunned, for it is inconsistent with the integrity of the divine realization. There's a beautiful prayer of Sri Aurobindo where he prays to all the gods and he says, "Now liberate me from all the gods." I think we stop here today, huh? Thank you.